Nadira Simmons. Nadira is a writer who specializes in Black history, hip-hop history, and pop culture. In 2018, Nadira created The Gumbo, an innovative media space that celebrates the excellence and activism of Black women in hip-hop. Now, Nadira is celebrating some of these trailblazing artists in her pop culture history book. It's called First Things First, Hip-Hop Ladies Who Changed the Game. The book covers icons like Queen Latifah, Mary J. Blige, and the Queen Bee herself, rapper Lil' Kim. Nadira says that rap and hip-hop can often be smashed together, but she defines them as different things.
Hip-hop, as much as I try to not use the word culture because I feel like we overuse it, it really is a culture. It's expansive and it involves so many things, not just those elements that we listed, even though, yes, those are very big, you know, those are very big parts of it. But when we talk about the documentation and the magazines and the fashion and the journalists and the historians, there's so many different elements that make up this culture that really evolved from that party that we credit as the first official start date of hip-hop on August 11, 1973.
I love the way you've structured First Things First. It's got this stream of consciousness vibe and these great thought experiments. It reminded me a lot of Shea Serrano books.
We've had
him on the show a few times, and I think you've had an interview with him. Was Shea an influence on your writing?
Absolutely, 110%. I think the great thing about Shea's work and something that I wanted to do with the book, there's so much history in there. There are so many facts. And I am a nerd. I can admittedly read through encyclopedias and pages and pages and pages of dates and retain the information. But I think a lot of times when people are getting so much information thrown at them, it's really hard to remember a lot of this stuff. And the book was so important to me to write because I'm telling these stories of these women who don't always get their just due or aren't known about. So I wanted there to be a way for them to feel like they were in conversation with me or to play one of the games on the inside or solve one of the puzzles so that they could better retain the information besides me just throwing a bunch of facts and dates and histories at them.
You created an online platform called The Gumbo in 2018. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I really wanted to have a place where women, and especially Black women, could write about hip hop. I ended up working in TV, going into TV, and I like saved all of my checks from my job at the time for a year to launch the platform. But I was really disheartened by a lot of my peers and people I knew who, one, I knew were exceptional writers and weren't getting the opportunities. Two, were getting the opportunities and weren't getting paid. And three, were getting the opportunities and weren't allowing their voice to be heard and prioritized. And for me, when you think about the community that hip hop comes from, it's Black and brown communities. It's crazy to me that the people who are a part of it aren't able, especially women, aren't able to be fairly compensated or aren't given the space to talk about things or even the space to celebrate particular women. So I kind of wanted to change that. And again, like I said, because I'm a nerd, I wanted to have this kind of historical archive so someone could learn about a gangsta boot for the first time, or they could learn about the connections between jazz and Mary J. Blige for the first time. Like, I really wanted that to exist. So now if someone beyond, you know, the scope of whatever it is they're seeing out there in their day-to-day lives, if they're like, wait, I think I've heard of this person before, they can go online and they can see an article on The Gumbo and they can learn about them.
Very cool. That's very cool that you've done that. We can't talk about hip-hop and rap without talking about the legendary rapper, singer, songwriter, and actress Queen Latifah. How did she change the game?
My primary introduction to her was getting my hair done with my mom and watching Living Single on Sundays. So I saw her as an actress first and foremost growing up. I was like, this woman is an actress. When movies were coming out, she was in all of these different movies. And I think something that people kind of take for granted now, and particularly when it comes to hip hop, sometimes you often hear like, oh, this person, they surpassed hip hop or they moved out of hip hop and they were able to be something even bigger, quote unquote. And it's like, no, you can operate within hip hop and still achieve all of your dreams.
So listen very carefully as I break it down for you. Merrily, 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 high to happy, overjoyed. Please, will all the beats and rhymes my sisters have employed. Look, as you throwing down the sound, totally a yes. Let me state the position. Ladies first, yes?
Yes.
And the great thing about Queen Latifah, when we think about someone like Will Smith, who, you know, came from Philadelphia, was rapping, and now is an Oscar winner, Queen Latifah is in that same boat. And in addition to that, she had her own talk show that she hosted two times over. She had two iterations of it. She's the first rapper to get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, period, regardless of gender identity. She was a cover girl and a model. Like, she has all of these different things that she was able to do. And not only did she do it within the context of hip hop, but she also let people know that we're able to do whatever it is we want to do.
Very well said. Two of your favorite hip-hop artists are Lil' Kim and Mary J. Blige.
Yes. I'm
curious to know what they mean to you. Let's start with Lil' Kim. You say that she provided the first blueprint for the modern woman in rap. How so?
Yeah. I could talk about Lil' Kim all day. And I think that was one of the struggles with writing her chapters, because I do talk about her a lot. I was like, how do I hammer this home? I think it could be best summed up by just literally looking at her and listening to her music. People often talk about, you know, the hairstyles and the fashion and the endorsement deals. And for every Lil' Kim outfit or hairstyle that you look at, you can find a woman who raps today or in recent years who has replicated it in some way, from a pose that now people will replicate. Halloween time comes around. Even Beyonce's dressing up as Lil' Kim for Halloween. Like, everyone just understands her magnitude and her power. And I think for her to take a lot of the hits that she took, you know, when she's on Rolanda Watts's show and she, all these people are on a panel with her and they're telling her basically that she's a terrible influence. There's people in the audience who are like trying to berate her and make her feel bad. And she really stands up for herself. She makes it clear what she should be able to do as a grown woman and how she should be able to operate. A lot of the stuff that women are able to do in rap today, from the fashion to the endorsement deals to the collaborations to the hairstyles with the designs in it, even in Cardi B's recent video that just dropped, she has a hairstyle that's similar to one that Lil' Kim rocked, to songs like WAP, whatever it is. Like, a lot of the stuff that women are able to do, even with critique, because there's always going to be haters, there's always going to be people that are like, oh, we can't do this. But so much of what women in rap have today is because of a lot of what Lil' Kim took.
Very well said. Is there a particular Lil' Kim song that you think really connects with your theory about her creating the blueprint?
Oh my gosh. I want to say Crush on You, because it's such a popular song. It's one of her more popular songs. It's just super obvious. Obviously, I think music today is a little bit different than then, but the sampling of that song, the structure and what she's rapping about and how she's very braggadocious to me is what makes me just connect it to a lot of the women who rap today and have a similar style to her. You know I love the way you fill up, sip my tequila, from the dilla, full-length chinchilla. Heat up the clutch, 750 deluxe. Then we speed down the hutch, breaking trees in the dust. I'm not the one you sleep with, then eat quick. Want a cheap chick? Better go down a Freaknik. When you look at the women who rap today, whether they're quote-unquote backpack rappers or conscious, or quote, when people say, oh, they're quote-unquote, this is like a more sexual rapper, whatever it is, there's a lot more freedom. That is to say, there's still more work to be done, because there's a lot that still holds women back. We obviously are living within a patriarchy, so we gotta do a lot more work to make them feel safe and comfortable and 100% free. But I love that there is a little bit more freedom in the music that we listen to today when it comes to the women.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully there'll be more than a little bit freedom as time goes on. Let's hope so. Let's talk a bit about Mary J. Blige. You describe her as the first and only queen of hip hop soul. Why does she hold this status in your mind?
Her coming out and coming into the music scene, for her to sing over hip hop beats usually reserved for rap songs, it was just really unprecedented. And that's not to say it hasn't been incorporated in that way before. Of course, you have, you know, early iterations of New Jack Swing that kind of do that same thing. But the great thing about Mary and what took it to the next level, and in the book, that's why I mentioned a lot of the blues women, is because Mary gets on these like rap beats and she starts singing about all of these different things that are usually reserved for ballads or are usually reserved for blues songs. So whether it's infidelity, whether it's, you know, abuse or, you know, pain or heartbreak or loss or grief, she pairs those things with rap, and all together it makes it hip hop. And it was just so creative. It was really innovative. And to see someone like her do that, even when you think about the music today and how much of it is, you know, similar to her, you'll hear a lot of songs where people are singing over hip hop or quote unquote rap beats. And you'll see a lot of people incorporating the style. It's just so, and then for her to also do that and not dress like any other like R&B singer, I think a lot of times we have the image of the R&B singer, especially back then. And it's like, okay, they have on like a nice silk two-piece suit or a nice blouse and their heels. And she was like, I am from New York. And I'm going to put on my combat boots and my knee pads and my jersey and my hat and my big earrings. And shout out to Misa Hylton, who styled her for much of that time. But I'm really going to represent me as a hip hop woman within this music.
What Mary J. Blige song resonates the most with you and why?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, this is a tough one because I have so many. I'll say the You Remind Me remix. I love it because I love the extra rap verse in there. I just love how like extra quote unquote hip hoppy it is. You know that you remind me of a love that I once knew. Yes, you do. Really knows how to kind of hammer home ideas. And I always make this joke with my friends, and I've seen people make this joke online, is you would be like 8 or 9 years old listening to Mary J. Blige and you would feel what she was talking about, even if you had never like experienced it. I have never experienced a relationship or heartbreak or any of the stuff she was talking about at 9, but I would listen to the music and really like feel something. It's just something about her. She's able to really pull you in and make you feel whatever it is she's singing about.
Our conversation wouldn't be complete without talking about Ms. Lauryn Hill and her album, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, which was released in 1998. It was considered a groundbreaking masterpiece. How so?
Lauryn Hill's ability, one, she's an amazing rapper. The production on that album is insane. She's also an amazing singer. And I think that's one thing. A lot of times you'll have people who can like sing really, really well. And then maybe they can rap like a teensy bit, or they can perform lyrics really well that someone may have written for them. Or you have someone who can rap really, really well and they can hold a little note, but they're not the best singer. Lauryn Hill's amazing at both. So we're already starting off with her being amazing at rapping and being amazing at singing. And then you're incorporating all these different sounds from the Black diaspora. So you're, you know, we're getting the reggae influence and Jamaican influence. You have, you know, Carlos Santana on the album who's playing the guitar and, you know, nodding to different parts of, you know, the world. So then you're bringing all of that together with this woman who's just so multi-talented and multifaceted. There was just nothing that really sounded like that. Unsure what the balance held, I touched my belly overwhelmed by what I had been chosen to perform. But then an angel came one day, told me to kneel down and pray, for unto me a man child would be born. Oh, this crazy. Beyond it just sounding good, she is really, really good at rapping. She's a great rapper, and she's a great singer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. She was the first woman to win 5 Grammys in a single night. Miseducation debuted at number 1 on the Billboard 200 chart, which was the first time a woman rapper had an album in that spot. All kinds of first things first, to quote you, the name of your book. Yeah. Who will you be writing about in your sequel, Second Thing Second, over the next 20 years?
Yes. Okay, I love that you said it, because that's what I want to call it. I do want to call it Second Thing Second.
Excellent.
That is so funny. There are so many women that, because the book has this idea of first, that I wanted to include, and yes, there are some metaphorical chapters and some, you know, very real tangible chapters, but I felt like I was trying to force a lot of them. So there was a chapter on battle rap that I really wanted to incorporate that just didn't really land in the way that I wanted to, so I scrapped it. I definitely want to incorporate Mia X. I think there are more elements of Lil' Kim's legacy that I want to specifically dive into, so she'll definitely be back. Even in the midst of doing my research or one of the book Q&A that I did in New York, I had women come up to me and they were telling me that, yeah, I was the first woman to edit at such and such hip hop magazine. I'm like, oh my God, well, you have to go in the next book. Like, this is crazy. So there's so much stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's the possibility you've got like first things first is done now, second things second. Hopefully we can look forward to third things third, which would be like a trilogy. And then you could go beyond that because there are always going to be new discoveries.
Exactly.
New hip hop and rappers, women.
Always,
so, yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Absolutely. Nadira Simmons, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on First Things First. It's a very entertaining and enlightening book. We are looking forward to Second Things Second.
Thank you. And thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Nadira Simmons is the author of First Things First, Hip Hop Ladies Who Changed the Game. Find out more about Nadira at wpr.org/beta.
I think the passage of time is the greatest mystery. Death is not the greatest mystery. It's passing of time. It's something you think about every day.
Coming up, crime novelist George Pelicanos talks about his most autobiographical book yet. It's a collection of four novellas called Owning Up. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.